It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up today, it is not official yet in any way, shape, or form, not announced by the Seahawks, but we think we know the list widely reported of guys that have agreed to terms as undrafted free agents with the team. Which ones do I like the most? Am I most excited to watch? Have I heard the best things about? Do I think have the best shot at making the team? I'll point out those seven today. And then we'll take a look at how they fit into the roster and what the roster looks like as a whole. A full roster reset. By my count, we have 91 players on the 90-man roster right now. What does that mean? Where are the roster crunches and the best areas of competition? Are there still some pressing needs? Might there be some position changes coming in camp or even a couple of trades? We're talking full roster construction today on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Viens.
I don't know, guys. It took me like four tries to get that intro. And I'm not even sure it's exactly what I wanted. I think I'm just a little experiencing a little of the post-draft recovery. Maybe the mouth just isn't working right. Sometimes it just doesn't connect to the brain. Ever have days like that where you just, no matter how clear of a thought you think you have in your head, you cannot get it through your lips the way you intend it? I have that at work. I have that here in front of the microphone. I have it at my job sometimes. It's the opposite sometimes as well, doing both this and that. There are other days where it just feels like I'm on autopilot and everything just naturally comes out of my mouth and makes sense. Let's hope today is more that than the former. What do you think of the roster so far? We're going to take a look at my updated spreadsheet that I think is mostly accurate. And I've inserted the names that have been reported to have agreed to terms with the Seahawks. Seahawks always seem to be one of the latest teams to officially announce their list. Some of that is bookkeeping, I think. Seahawks do have to move a little money around in order to sign some of these guys. It's always interesting, too, to see which guys get the biggest bonuses and the biggest guaranteed contracts. There's some really cool names on this list. We'll get to that in a minute. Before we do, hit that like button. If you're watching the YouTube channel, subscribe to the channel. Hit that bell so that you get notification of future episodes. And if you want to support the show in any way, shape, or form, best way to do that is to subscribe and watch, listen to the episodes on audio, whichever platform you prefer. You can listen to the show there. But if you want to hear ad-free episodes, you can do so on Spotify for a low monthly fee. You can check that out. And then had a lot of people take advantage of the opportunity to buy me a coffee or a beer over the weekend with all the draft coverage. Really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Tons and tons of support. The draft recap video is 16,000 views and climbing. And last I checked, there was about 120 comments, some really long ones, some great in-depth detailed thoughts from you guys on the draft. That's always encouraged. I love the engagement. I read them all. I know I don't always reply to them all, but I always do check them out. I get email notifications for each and every comment, so I always check them out a little bit. Some require instant and immediate replies for some for good reasons and some bad, but I try to get to the good ones. But I'm always reading them and I always see them and I appreciate it. Other ways you can support the show, you can check out the super like button down below. And the other thing that I'll say is if you haven't checked it out yet, if you have an actual YouTube account, is you subscribe to YouTube Premium. I think it's worth it because if you're like me and you get down rabbit holes and you just start watching video after video and you can spend hours on YouTube, being able to do so without watching any of the ads, it's pretty cool. It's pretty great. So check that out as well. The list of undrafted free agents had begun coming out almost immediately. And in case you're not aware, this process is intense. And for all the reasons that I would love to be in the war room someday and be able to experience that process. And by the way, that makes me think that I hope we have a John Boyle piece coming out in the next day or two on Seahawks.com. He typically does a story after the draft where he gives some kind of behind the scenes little tidbits about how things went down throughout the draft. But I would like to be in there during the seventh round because that's when teams really start to recruit undrafted free agents, right? As they watch names get to the bottom and they see names that are left on their board and guys that they want to bring in on deals, it's cutthroat. It's a competitive atmosphere out there. And teams are trying to decide who they think they want to fill out their roster, and players are trying to decide where the best opportunities are. And sometimes teams will use a seventh round pick, a late pick on a player because they don't feel confident with how the conversations are going on the phone that they're going to be able to get them to agree to a deal after the draft is over. So they'll just use a pick on him. And sometimes that particular position group might be a little more competitive, might be tougher to draw some of the better prospects out there. I felt like that might have been an issue with the Seahawks at the running back position. They were able to sign three so far, reportedly. One of them shows up on my list of seven most intriguing guys. But I thought, you know, looking at that young, talented running back room that they've invested some resources in, right? Two second-round picks and a seventh. All young guys on their rookie contracts, and that's a tough room. So, you know, if you're a running back prospect coming out of college, you might consider going to another organization where you thought there were more opportunities. That kind of thing. And that starts to really take off during the seventh round. And for the Seahawks this year, of course, with the trade they made to get out of the seventh round, that was their focus. Maybe that gave them a little more time to really dig in on some of this, because I do feel like this, some of the names that started to come out immediately were names that, you know, were recognizable, guys that I was aware of, guys that I knew, guys that I had watched, guys that I had heard other people tell me about. And more so than other years. I remember when the list came out last year, I had to really dig and do some research. There just weren't not a lot of players that I was familiar with. And honestly, not a lot of them felt like guys that were going to have a legitimate shot to make the roster. I think this year, anytime you have a new coaching staff, obviously it's going to be more competitive. And I do think that while it'll probably never get back to 2010, 2011 levels when the Seahawks were making literally hundreds of roster moves between the draft and the start of the regular season, I think it'll be much more active this year than it has been the last five, six, 7 years under Pete Carroll. Just new coaching staff. You got to figure out what works and who fits and who doesn't. And I think that that back end of the roster churn, we may see more of that this year, but I also think we have a lot more depth and some really cool competition coming up, and we'll get into that when I show you the actual roster spreadsheet. But first, seven names of guys that I'm really intrigued by that the Seahawks have coming to camp, reportedly, again, as undrafted free agents. There's a whole nother list of guys that have been invited to rookie mini camp next week that if they impress, you know, they might get an opportunity then to be signed to the roster, and some other guys will fall off. And I do have one name kind of as a bonus at the end of this list that's from that group. The first guy that stood out to me was Easton Gibbs, because this is a guy that Michael Thompson of 12th Man Rising, who does such a great job analyzing the draft, had him on the show many times, tried to get him to be able to join me today, just didn't have the opportunity for our schedules to match up. He's been telling me about Easton Gibbs for the better part of 12 months now. Inside linebacker from Wyoming, alma mater of one Logan Wilson, who's one of my favorite inside linebackers, just signed a big extension with the Cincinnati Bengals. Gibbs, not as tall or long or physically gifted as Wilson was, but 6 foot, 230 pounds, not the most athletic and explosive guy, but really productive. Two-time All-Mountain West. Last 2 years alone, 230 tackles, 13 tackles for loss, 5 sacks, 7 passes broken up, 3 forced fumbles, always around the ball. Even though he's a 4'7", 40 guy, seems instinctive, comes up, stacks and sheds, takes on blocks, just looks like a lunch pail carrying blue collar kind of inside linebacker that when you think about in terms of, you know, is this guy going to come out and crack the top three? No. And I include Tyrese Knight, the fourth round pick, in that top three. But is he going to compete with Patrick O'Connell and Drake Thomas and John Rattigan potentially for that fourth linebacker spot? Maybe, or at least a guy that could be on the practice squad, right? Like Drake Thomas was last year. And Patrick O'Connell. I think actually Thomas spent most of the year on the regular roster because they poached him off the practice squad from the Raiders, and so they had to protect him. But a guy that they were high on, and a guy that, you know, when they grabbed him from the Raiders last year, Raiders were chagrined. They tried to pass him through. They wanted to keep him, right? And Thomas is another guy similar to Gibbs, you know, 230, 235 pounds, but barely 6 foot. Kind of similar physical style. And Thomas was a guy that I really liked. And I think to this day, that video, still the highest viewed video on the channel, but Gibbs is the guy that I think is interesting because he is a little more stout than McConnell. And I think he and Drake Thomas, it's going to be interesting to see those guys play in the preseason, given at least assuming that Gibbs will make it to the preseason. Another guy, that Michael Thompson has been telling me about for a long time. I think over a year. I think this might have gone back to the very beginnings of his draft analysis for this class. Told me about Hayden Hatton, wide receiver, Idaho. Called him a poor man's Cooper Kupp. 6'2", 205 pounds, really experienced. This is a recurring theme we're going to see in this class and among a bunch of the guys, and I talked about on the recap show yesterday or Saturday night, that the Seahawks drafted as well. Because of the COVID years, a lot of these guys played a lot of football, really experienced. Hatton spent his entire 5-year career at Idaho. That's rare, especially for a guy so productive. He's played in 45 games over those 5 years. The last 2 years alone, 175 catches, 2,400 yards, 25 touchdowns. Last year, almost 100 of those catches in a single season. Finished with 33 touchdown receptions. That's the Idaho all-time record for a wide receiver. Similar to Jake Bobo last year, although not as tall. 4'6", 4'7", guy, but runs really good routes, extremely sure hands, more explosive than that 40 time would tell you, almost a 40-inch vertical jump. Had some cool explosive testing numbers, at least that I could glean from, you know, didn't go to the combine, didn't have a full pro day. But just a guy that seems like, you know, the Seahawks had Cody Thompson on and off the roster and on the practice squad for 40 years, or for 40 years, Jesus, for 4 years. And then they kind of moved on from him at the end of last year. Finally, Hatton, I think, sort of fills a similar profile. I mean, just a guy that, he might be a practice squad guy, but really interesting depth and a guy that's just smooth. When you watch him, he's just really smooth. Everything seems to come easy to him as he runs routes and catches the ball, contested catches. Fun player. Speaking of fun players, of course there had to be a Washington Husky added at some point. And I am amazed, another side note, that at the lack of Michigan players that were added, right? Not a single defender. Kind of thought once we got to undrafted free agency that you know, guys like Braden McGregor might be in the mix and some of those other Michigan guys. AJ Barner, the tight end, being the only one added through the draft. But Jack Westover, tight end, Washington native kid, grew up in Bellevue. This has to be an exciting moment for him. And he's an interesting dude in that he's not like Barner. He's not like anything else they have on the roster. He's not that tall, kind of vertical threat type tight end. 6'3", 243. He's played some fullback and H-back, and that's the way scouts kind of see him projecting. Again, no dynamic athletic skills, but productive, even though with those three receivers they had at UW, like, you know, targets were tough to come by. But 77 catches over the last 2 years. And just a guy who's going to be familiar with that offense, right? He's going to know Ryan Grubb. Grubb obviously trusts him and sees upside there in order for them to sign him. And there's an opportunity. The Seahawks typically carry four tight ends. They carried Brady Russell last year as the fourth tight end, even though he only got a couple of reps as a tight end, made his money on special teams. But, and I would think that's where the battle would be. I mean, Tyler Mabry is still sticking around. But Westover Russell would seem to kind of be the battle for me in camp for that fourth tight end spot. I talked about running backs. George Helani out of Boise State probably is drafted if he didn't have the injury history. Had some knee issues early in his career. I mean, he got off to the phenomenal start at Boise State. He was Mountain West Freshman of the Year in 2019, ran for over 1,000 yards as a freshman for the Broncos. Kind of looks the part of that Seahawk running back, 5'10", 208. Good overall athleticism. He's a 4'5", 40 guy at that size, 39-inch vertical, strong enough to do 24 reps on the bench at 225. Really productive when he was healthy. Five seasons at Boise State, 3,600 yards, 5.2 yards per carry, 26 touchdowns on the ground, another 88 catches. He has soft hands. Seems to be an adequate enough blocker on third down. Although, you know, you can say this about any running back ever coming out of college, needs work in that area of his game. But he has that injury history. Again, if he's healthy, he's probably drafted. He was the highest graded player left on Lance Zierlein's board on NFL.com at the running back position after the draft concluded. If he can stay healthy, he's got, I think, has a shot to make the roster. He just looks like a Seahawk running back. More of a straight line guy, kind of a one cut and go guy, not the shiftiest, but willing to put his shoulder down, good size, good leverage. Just looks like a guy who's going to make your practice squad at worst and give you some good depth at the running back spot. And the Seahawks need it. You'll see when we put the roster up in a little bit. Nelson Caesar is a guy that I wasn't familiar with, didn't study, but as soon as I watched, somebody posted his highlights. He was the first undrafted free agent that I saw reported to have signed. This looks like a dude that has an opportunity to make the roster and really push Daryl Taylor. 6'3", 245, plays, looks like he has really long arms, longer than they are, plays with a ton of motor. And the interesting thing, when you turn on the tape and you watch Nelson Caesar, you see him, when I first watched a couple of games where they showed every snap, and he's lining up at stack linebacker. Like, he's playing Mike. He's calling the defense. He's pointing things out. And I thought at first that the first tape I was watching, maybe they were putting the arrow to the wrong guy and they were making a mistake. Because he wore a single digit. It was 8 or 9. And I thought maybe they're getting him mixed up with 0 over there. But no, they moved him around like that. He played a significant number of snaps at Houston at inside linebacker at 6'3", 245. Now, he didn't look supernatural there, even though he's taking some zone drops. Saw him take some 20 and 25-yard drops. But then they'd have him on the right side, on the left side, out beyond the tackle. They'd have him on all fours at times. And I think that's when he's at his best, is on the edge. Good bend, good explosion, beat some tackles to the outside, and just really long arms and good finisher when he gets to the quarterback. In 3 years, 101 tackles, 27 and a half tackles for loss, 17 sacks. Maybe there's an opportunity there to kind of have him be that hybrid guy. McDonald did that with Malik Harrison last year, didn't he? In Baltimore, kind of played him off the edge sometimes, played him inside at times, kind of didn't know where he was going to come. Nelson Caesar, I don't know enough about his ability to stop the run, but it's pretty tough to imagine that he's not better than Daryl Taylor at that, to be honest. And I think this is a really interesting dude. You know, the Seahawks can save $3 million by moving on from Daryl Taylor, whether there's, you know, someone willing to give a conditional pick or something in next year's draft for him. Once they get to camp and realize they might be a little light at that spot, or there might be teams out there that just see him as a situational pass rusher only, and there's value in that. But that's one way the Seahawks can save some money. And as Curtis Allen said on the show last week, they still need to clear about $11.5 million in order to fit in their draft class and practice squad and contingencies and all that. One way to do that is moving on from Daryl Taylor. And I think Nelson Caesar's going to be hot on his tail. He's going to be fun to watch. Always look at the quarterbacks, right? And for a minute there, and I said on the draft recap show, because I had finished recording it before the draft was officially over, and I thought there was a chance Michael Pratt was going to go undrafted, in which case I really do believe the Seahawks would have been competing hard for him. I just think that he's probably a guy they liked, not enough to take before the sixth round, obviously. But a guy that I wasn't familiar with, Chevin Cordero, quarterback, San Jose State, started his career at Hawaii, played 4 years there, transferred to San Jose State. So he's one of those guys. He's going to turn 25 this season. There's so many of those guys in the draft this year that I don't really pay a lot of attention to that. But I was surprised at what I saw when I sought out some video of this guy. The first game I watched is when they played up a level and they played USC in the Rose Bowl. And not the Rose Bowl, I'm sorry. And every snap from that game, and he looked like he belonged. He looked like he belonged against USC, and obviously not the most vaunted defense, but yet it certainly looked like USC's defensive front was overpowering San Jose State's offensive line because he wasn't able to stay on his spot very often. But it also showed off part of his skill set. Another guy that has a ton of experience, you know, 61 games in college, 46 games started. He's thrown in total for over 12,000 yards, 88 touchdowns, 32 interceptions. He's also added 1,600 yards on the ground and 25 rushing TDs. Really mobile, quick release, decisive. Looks like he does get through some progressions, even though there's a lot of zone read and RPO type stuff in that San Jose State offense. But there were examples in the USC game of him coming back to his second and third progression. Thought he had a little bit of a windup, a little bit of hitch in his delivery, but he gets through it so quickly, I don't think it's an issue. And he had a stronger arm than I thought. Like I said, the first 10 or 12 reps really didn't get a chance to gauge that because he was always throwing on the run, which showed he's capable of doing that. Good ball placement when he's scrambling. But he doesn't hold on to the ball too long. When he gets an opportunity to stick his foot in the ground, he gets rid of it. And against, you know, when you're San Jose State playing USC, obviously you have to look for those opportunities. But I thought the arm was stronger than I expected it to be. Watched some interviews with the kid, seems really sharp. The one concern, if you look at his stats, you'll see that his career completion percentage is just under 60%. That's usually not great. Usually doesn't translate well to the NFL. But also in that USC game alone, I saw at least seven drops where he had really, really good ball placement and the receiver just wasn't there for him. Just flat out drops. You get more of that at that level. But he's an interesting player. I think I like him. I think I like him more than I liked. Now I'm blanking on the kids. The kid from last year. The lefty. I'll spout his name out later when I think of it. It drives me crazy when I can't remember a name. So that is six. I promised you seven, right? Garrett Greenfield is a guy that I had mocked to the Seahawks in the draft in the fifth or sixth round or around that range for months. Another one of those guys, San Diego State, played with Mason McCormick there, played a lot of football there. At a very high level, a national championship level program there, and really stood out at the combine. That's where he got onto my radar. For a guy 6'6", 305, really athletic, 38 and a half inch vertical, 99th percentile there, 80th percentile for wingspan. Overall, his relative relative athletic score, 8.67. Here's the cool thing about him. Three-time FCS All-American. And he played right tackle in 20 and 21 and left tackle in 22 and 23. So he was an All-American at both tackle spots. And even though most scouting services seem to want to project him at guard, with that length and that athletic ability and that experience, albeit at a lower level, obviously, I see this guy as a potential swing tackle candidate. Maybe a guy that can push Stone Forsythe, or at worst, a guy that can spend some time in the practice squad and develop. I'm not so sure that I don't like him better as a developmental tackle prospect to Mike Jarrell, the kid they took out of Finley in the sixth round. Now, he's much bigger, much stronger, so you might see the upside there, but Greenfield's athletic ability, I think, might give him an advantage over some of those guys. He's really intriguing to me, and a guy that I was surprised wasn't drafted. And then I told you there would be a bonus, right? Talia Tongavaioa. Does that name sound familiar? Right, of course. It's Tua's little brother, started his career at Alabama. They were on the roster at the same time there for a little bit. Big things were expected of him. He was a big-time recruit. Ends up transferring to Maryland and never really kind of slipped out of the limelight once he transferred to Maryland. Had his struggles with throwing interceptions at times, but ended up throwing for over 11,000 yards and 77 touchdowns for the Terrapins. Added 13 rushing touchdowns. Looked really good in the Shrine game. Led a couple touchdown drives there. He's a smaller guy. He's listed at 5'10". Some think he's probably not even 5'10". He's small. Really quick release. Gets the ball out quick. Can be creative. Can scramble. It's interesting to me that he ends up getting invited to mini camp, and the Seahawks chose not to sign John Rhys Plumlee, who they met with on a 30 visit. And I don't think that he's signed anywhere else yet. Similar type player. Smaller, athletic, can scramble. God, the days of the Seahawks always bringing 4 and 5 quarterbacks to camp are probably gone. Like, 3's probably enough. Holton Ahlers is the name from last year. Just came to me. So they just kind of went with 3 guys last year as well. And, you know, we'll see what they want to do this year, maybe with a new coaching staff. You know, a 4th guy is intriguing. But then again, you know, you're going to want to get as many reps for Geno and Sam Howell as you can. So it's probably, you know, if he shows up and has a really good camp, it's probably just a battle between him and Cordero for who's going to be that 3rd quarterback coming to camp. So some interesting kids there. Let's see how it looks now when we enter them all onto the roster. So this is, hopefully you can see that okay. And what I have here is offense on top, defense on the bottom. In green, those are players that at this point I consider to be locks to make the roster. And I've added some of the draft picks in there, most of the draft picks, to be honest. I mean, A.J. Barner, I'm putting as a lock on the tight end spot. Satoa Lomeo from Utah, I'm putting in as a lock at guard. Even though there's some there's some disagreement about what he's going to play. The Seahawks actually, when they posted their, hey, welcome to Seattle, and they put up the graphic, and even when they first drafted him, they announced him as a tackle. But then in his conference call with reporters after the draft, Lamea said that he expects to play guard. That's what makes the most sense to me, is to play him at guard. And I like him enough there. I think it's great. He has that positional versatility in an emergency. If Abe Lucas starts the season on the pup list and George Fant goes down, I mean, maybe Lamea is a guy that can just slide back out to right tackle where he played so much at Utah. But at guard, I see a lot more upside. And I think long-term, Christian Haynes and Lamea could be your long-term answers at guard. And Anthony Bradford's got a battle on his hands at that spot. At center, they've only added one so far in undrafted free agency, Mike Nowitzki out of Kansas. I don't know, just, you know, looking at his background, he seems like a guy that, you know, might have a shot to make the practice squad. Probably a tough task beating out Nick Harris. Kind of thought they would add maybe a little bit more competition there. Although there is some thought that Christian Haynes can play center. He took some reps at the Senior Bowl. I think Mike McDonald even mentioned that versatility the other day. If something should happen to Oluwatimi or they're just not happy with him, I could see a scenario where Haynes becomes the center long-term. There are some scouts who think that would be his best position, that he can potentially be a dominant guy at the pivot. So it'd be interesting to see how that works out. But the green names are the ones that I see as locks at this point. And then on defense, you know, I think this is a good example of maybe a guy that we're not sure how much he's going to contribute as a rookie, but certainly Tyrese Knight being taken in the fourth round was a huge focal point of the draft for them. They obviously took him sooner than the consensus expected him to. They like him more than most. He's a lock. I think the two corners out of Auburn are locks. And this is where it starts to get interesting. So I have a total of 91 names here. But again, this is based on the reported UDFA guys also. There's another name or two out there that some people have said they've heard connected to Seattle also. But I didn't put their names here because I couldn't find the attribution. It's 91 names. You're only allowed 90 in the offseason, so something's going to happen. And this probably is one of the reasons the Seahawks don't announce their UDFAs right away and haven't yet. So they got to figure some things out, right? Some flexibility is going to be needed here. I mean, there's guys like Aaron Beasley that might not make the final 91, right? Some of these guys at the bottom of the list in the front seven. it's interesting as I watch this, just remember the days when they would always bring another kicker and another punter in to compete, right? Man, it must be a great lifestyle to be a specialist in the NFL, not have any competition for your job, and make the kind of guaranteed money Jason Myers and Michael Dixon are making. But this is what it looks like with everyone added in. So I've got the 91 names. I have 44 in green. So by my count here, it's 44 out of the 53-man roster that I think is already accounted for. That leaves 9 spots up for grabs, theoretically. Obviously, some of these names, there will be surprises. Especially with a new coaching staff, there will be shocks. There will be guys that go on the pup list, injured list, et cetera, right? Jarek Reed, he's not down as a lock, but he may go on the injured list. Won't count against the 90. You just don't have to do that right now. And then the big one, of course, is Abe Lucas. We really don't know the status of his health. And even though Schneider says he's doing well in his recovery, wouldn't surprise me if he starts the season on the pup list. So that is what the list looks like. I think, obviously, some of the position groups to watch the most heading into camp, and then obviously the preseason, that inside linebacker group, right? Because if you can see these numbers here at the top of each position group, that's the number at each position that they kept last year on the initial 53. And I went back a couple of years too, and this pretty much lines up. Some of them sort of combined together, right? There have been years where, you know, you see outside linebacker, inside linebacker, it's a total of 9 and they'll play with that. There have been some years where they'll keep a fifth guy that's more of an inside guy versus the outside guy because some of the players listed as defensive linemen can also play the outside. Same thing with the defensive linemen. They kept 4 tackles last year, 3 ends, but that's such a convoluted kind of designation, especially not really knowing exactly how Mike McDonald and his staff plan to use these guys. So just think in terms of a total of 7 up front. I have under ends, I have Leonard Williams, Draymond Jones, Mike Morris listed, but obviously Williams and Jones are actually going to play some tackle. Jaren Reed might bump out and actually play some end. We don't know how they're going to use Byron Murphy yet. Mike Morris is another guy that might play some inside and outside. And then you still have Miles Adams, Matt Gotell, Levi Bell. Remember where we were a year ago at this time? The Seahawks had signed Draymond Jones in free agency, given him the big deal, biggest free agent contract of the John Schneider era. And they had signed Jaren Reed, but he was coming off a bad year in Green Bay. I remember some of the clips that Griffin Sturgeon was showing of him just getting his butt kicked 10, 15 yards down the field and not being a factor. And then they had just signed drafted Cam Young in the 4th, Mike Morris in the 5th. We didn't know what we were going to get out of those guys. And so there was a lot of consternation about the defensive line this time a year ago. Who are they still going to add? They have to sign some veterans. They have to add more. They didn't do enough. And then this year you see all those guys are there. Reed, Young, Williams, you know, they trade for Leonard Williams, re-sign him as a free agent. That's a big time move. Morris is healthy now, presumably after missing his rookie year with the shoulder injury. You add Byron Murphy to that with the 16th pick. You add Jonathan Hankins in free agency, one of the better nose tackles out there in the league. And you still have Miles Adams in his fourth year in the program. And Matt Gotell, who got some run the last two games of the year last year, a bigger dude that can play that 0-1 technique. That's a much, much better group. When I see things said by fans of other teams, and there's been a lot of this the last couple of days, our draft was better than yours, yours stunk, our roster's better. Had a guy come at me yesterday about how he thinks the Seahawks didn't get better and are the fourth best roster in the division. The first place I would point to is this position grouping. How much better they are up front. They're more dynamic. They're bigger. They're more stout. There's a nice mix of veteran players and young guys with upside. It's a lot deeper. It's a lot for Mike McDonald to work with and adding Dirty in their first year in charge. And then that edge group, you know, we bring the whole group back intact. I think there's some intrigue there. Nwosu coming back off injury. That's a huge acquisition, essentially. I expect a big jump from Derek Hall in his second year, especially with this new coaching staff, Boye Mafe, to build on his second year jump that we saw last year. And then we'll see. Daryl Taylor's going to have to fight like heck to make this roster. I think there's some opportunity there. Wouldn't even surprise me. There's still some guys on the open market that can play edge that could come in on veteran minimum deals and really push this. And again, Daryl Taylor's an opportunity for them to save some money. And the inside linebacker, obviously Tyrese Knight, as I said, is going to make the team. I think he's battling John Rattigan, Drake Thomas, Patrick O'Connell. Easton Gibbs, I think, might be in that mix. He's an interesting dude. And then I mentioned as one of my takeaways on the post-draft show Saturday how we're going to find out about what the plans McDonald and his crew have with that secondary now in Seattle. Because adding the two guys from Auburn, both of whom by the consensus big board, by Lance Surline, by Dane Brugler, these guys were all drafted a round or two later than they were expected to be. They were both considered among the steals of this draft for the Seahawks. I think right up there with Christian Haynes, who I expected to go in the second round. You add those two guys to the mix. It just increases your flexibility and how you can use Devin Witherspoon. If you want to have him be your lockdown corner that travels with wide receiver ones, or you want to play him in the slot more so he's close to the line of scrimmage, makes more of an impact there, or you want to move him around and have him be the chess piece. You have so much more versatility now with adding Pritchett and James that I think really tough to see Artie Burns making this team now. And then Mike Jackson is an interesting one to me. He's another guy that if you cut him, you can save almost $3 million. If you cut him today, is my understanding. But I think he's a guy that Mike McDonald's going to like. I think he might be the most physical outside of Witherspoon of this corner group. Somebody threw this idea at me on Twitter the other day. What about, because there's still some concern they didn't add enough to this safety group. Certainly didn't add in the draft. Haven't seen any undrafted free agent safeties yet. Now, part of that might be how they feel about the guys they have. I've talked about this on the show. That Kobe Bryant's a guy. He's obviously now full-time in that safety room. And I like his upside there. And I think he's a guy that Mike McDonald would like and it would fit. They brought Kayvon Wallace in. He's an interesting guy. Jonathan Sutherland, a guy that, again, a guy that was getting first team reps late in training camp last year before he got hurt. Ty Okada got elevated and saw some time the last couple of games of last year. And Jarek Reed, the late draft pick last year, he's coming off an ACL, but really showed some things in the preseason. Certainly a guy that I think McDonald can work with. What about Mike Jackson profiling to safety if they want to start using him there? Loves to hit, physical player. Maybe the best size speed combination of that group. It's an interesting, interesting idea as a guy who can kind of go back and forth there that I could see. And then on offense, obviously the offensive line is where all the questions come in. I think, you know, It'll be fun in the preseason to watch the wide receivers. I almost put Laviska Shenault in green there. I do think as a veteran who's but still in the prime of his career age-wise and a guy who has such return ability that he's added to his game the last couple of years and just his ability to win at the catch point and get contested catches and be used out of the backfield and that kind of thing. He's probably making the team, and then it's just a matter, do they keep six receivers? They did last year, right? So there's opportunity there for a couple of guys to make this team. That'll be fun to watch. And then, but mostly it's the offensive line. It's where do they play, first of all? That's what I can't wait to see when they get into full squad workouts and mandatory minicamp next month. It's where do guys line up initially? And then who gets the reps? And in the preseason, I think this offensive line group's going to be, at least it personally, it's going to get a big part of my attention moving forward. Yeah, how do we feel about that roster? There are still a ton of street free agents out there. There's been a lot of talk of safety, right? And I'll just say this. You're not bringing Quandre Diggs back. You're not. I know he has a huge fan base among the 12s. But you're trying to establish a new culture. And not that he was a negative influence in any way. It sure doesn't seem like he was. I've seen him interact with the guys before, and he's beloved. But after you went out and made the moves that you did to bring in Jenkins and Wallace, you have Julian Love, who you signed last year. You made the move to move on from Adams and Diggs to kind of correct salary distribution positionally. Safety was just, it was too much committed to it. I just think that's a tough one to come back from. To bring Diggs back again, is he going to start over Rayshon Jenkins? Well, then that's a questionable signing. It just doesn't seem like a move that would feel right to me. If a guy gets hurt, different story. Maybe they will add another body or two there, but probably more from the bargain basement kind of segment of that group. And there are some guys out there. There's some names. I mean, Justin Simmons is still available, for crying out loud. Seahawks certainly aren't going to pursue that. But some of those guys will fall through the cracks. We've seen the devaluing of the safety position this offseason. There still may be some value to be had there. I am surprised that none of these undrafted free agents at the safety position have been signed. But again, it may just speak to how much they like the group they have on hand. Again, thanks for all the support over the weekend, guys, with the draft, the live streams, and the recap shows. If you haven't watched those yet, go check them out. Thanks for commenting. And as always, I really like the interaction. Be sure to hit me down below with what are your concerns about this roster right now? Where do you feel like the roster isn't as good as it was a year ago and you think there's still more work to be done? Coming up Wednesday morning, Brett Coleman will be joining me from the Film Room YouTube channel and other projects. If you're a football fan and you have access to YouTube, you're watching this show, you have no doubt watched Brett Coleman. And can't wait to get him on and get his thoughts from all the great work he does on these prospects of who he likes out of the Seahawks class and the undrafted free agent class, and also his thoughts elsewhere in the division. I will be breaking that down as we move forward. I'll be doing an episode here later this week on how I feel like the other three teams did, and then also trying to get some voices in from other creators that cover those teams, take an in-depth look at what it looks like, because some interesting drafts all the way around the division. But I'll tell you in an upcoming episode how I would rank the Seahawks draft class of the four in that division. Until then, at Seahawks Forever on Twitter, follow me there. Be sure to subscribe and support the show. Thanks for watching. Forever and always, go Hawks.